The chair calls the first meeting of the AALA Council to order. Will all councilors please occupy the reserved seats in the front of the room, actually in the middle of the room and front. Before we start, I'd like to just tell you a little bit about Wi-Fi. First of all, I'm going to give you the password, but secondly, you can't use it right now because it's temporarily down and they are working on it. But if you want to make, but if you want to make a notation in case you haven't already done it about the password, the network and password are both capital A, capital L, capital A, small c, 2014. Capital A, capital L, capital A, small c, 2014. And they are working on it, and we'll try to get a signal, and I can let you know when it, well, you'll find out before I do. Microphone four.
Yesterday, the password was all lowercase.
This is information I got from the tech guys. That's what the tech guy told me. What I told you is what he told me.
All right.
And it worked, and I'm online. Just thought I'd let you know.
All right. Well, I would say have a little adventure and try both. And then if somebody is still having trouble and we continue to be offline, we're working on it. So try creative approaches and you might be able to get in. This is the first meeting of council, first formal meeting, and some of you are here in council for the first time. So I want you to know how much we welcome you into this body and how valued your voice is. Please be comfortable. Find someone next to you who can give you advice. Do not hesitate to come to the microphone. We want to hear from you, and together we can create a very welcoming culture for all of us. Did you have something else? Did you?
When you get to the agenda.
Oh, okay. If you want to speak at the meeting, we have an example. Please go to the microphone and wait for recognition. Then give your name and indicate if you're a division counselor, a chapter counselor, and what state you're from, a counselor at large, or a roundtable counselor. Motion forms must be completed for all motions. For your convenience, the motion forms are available at each end of the table. I would like to stress the importance of filling out that form because we have to stop all deliberation if you propose a motion and we can't put it on the screen. It's really important for you to fill that out. Motion forms must be printed legibly, signed by the mover and seconder, and given to the projectionist before you go to the microphone. And this assures that we will have that overhead slide by the time you introduce your motion. You will be asked to raise one of your hands for all votes that are not adopted by general consent. Only if the vote seems close will I call for a standing vote. General consent voting will be only used for routine and non-controversial decisions, typically procedural type motions and decisions, such as the decision to recess or change the agenda. Use of a general consent is not an appropriate way of voting on main motions. Please watch the overhead screen for the motion description to use on your voting card. You may only use that descriptor. Please do not improvise. Your voting record is at your place, and you should have a pink card for this morning's meeting. Please, right now, write your name on the card and sign the card. Even before you have any votes registered, please sign your name, because we cannot record your vote if you haven't signed it and if you don't have a legible name there. If you must leave before adjournment, please take your card to Lois Ann Gregory Wood over at the projectionist table in this room. It's my pleasure now to introduce our parliamentarian, Ellie Mina. Ellie will be available at the resolutions table number 12 in the ALA offices here at the Convention Center, Hall C. And if you've tried to find it, it is a bit of a trek, so take your lunch on your way to help with any questions you may have regarding parliamentary procedures. The resolution table hours are listed in ALA CD number 3. Also on the platform today are Courtney L. Young, ALA President-elect, Joanne Kempf, Director of the Office of ALA Governance, and Keith Michael Fields, ALA Executive Director and the Secretary of Council. I would also like to reintroduce Danielle Alderson, who is busy working. Oh, there, she's on her way fixing something for us. Our projectionist, and Lois Ann Gregory Wood, ALA Council Secretariat. This meeting is being captioned for the hearing impaired. Our captionist for the midwinter meeting is Heather Theriak. If you wish to take advantage of this service, please be seated where you can see the screen. Also, we've reserved a table for members of the press. It is to my left, over there, that is left, near the captionist table. And electrical outlets are available for those of you who wish to plug in your laptops at the tables in the room. There is even a computer back there with a printer, so there's lots of technology available. We have some special guests with us today. If they are in the room, would you please stand as I call your name? But please, can we hold our applause, because I would like for everyone to feel equally recognized. I know you might not do that, but please try. The American Library Association is delighted to introduce the ALA presidential candidates, Maggie Farrell, Dean of Libraries, University of Wyoming, Laramie, Wyoming, and Sari Feldman, Executive Director, Cuyahoga County Public Library in Parma, Ohio. M. Claire Knowles, ALA Counselor and ALA Legacy Society Member and Spectrum Champion. Ann K. Simons, past ALA Treasurer and President. David S. Maul, Law Librarian of Congress, Library of Congress, Washington, D.C. Nancy Friedland, President, Theater Library Association. Also with us today are Paula Gilbert, immediate past president, Pennsylvania Library Association, Deb Hoodley, president, New England Library Association, Sarah Kelly Johns, president, New York Library Association and ALA executive board member, Linda McCarthy, president-elect, Florida Library Association, Brenda Metzger, president, Kentucky Library Association, Susie Saz Palmer, President-elect, Virginia Library Association. Excuse me, just one second. Eileen Palmer, President, New Jersey Library Association. Christine Payne, President, Delaware Library Association. Devonna Pendergrass, President, Arkansas Library Association. Gail Roberts, Chair-elect, Nebraska Library Association. Wendy Stevens, President-elect, Alabama Library Association. John C. Vendetta, President-elect, Maryland Library Association. Laura Wayne, President-elect, Kentucky Library Association. Amanda Wilson, President, District of Columbia Library Association, and Kathy Wolford, President, Michigan Library Association. We thank all of you for honoring us by your presence. And now we can applaud. The quorum for a council meeting is 75 councilors. I've been advised that we have well over 75 councilors present, and therefore we have a quorum. Thank you all for being here. Last night, you received a document with an overview of the results of the executive board retreat that we held on Tuesday and Wednesday of this week. What you saw last night is a process for making this available to the membership. What you didn't see last night is that we are setting up a process for feedback from members, which will be available in the 1st of February. And we will be setting up connect pages so that we can get robust feedback from our members. This is a draft plan, a way of strategically focusing our efforts as ALA and responding to all of the conversations and forums and input that we have received over the past couple of years. So we appreciate your reading that, and know that we are going to share this with all members in about a week. So it's available for sharing. We're not going to change it any, but it probably would be wise to wait in your sharing until we have the feedback mechanism in place, which will be about a week. In February, we are expecting to get all of the feedback, and we will do analysis of it in March. So it's a whole month that we're putting it out for feedback from everyone. The rules for this meeting are in Council Document 5. Written reports should not be read, and when resolutions are presented, only the resolved clauses should be read. The Resolutions Committee is responsible for reviewing all resolutions at least 24 hours before those resolutions are added to the Council agenda. Please be reminded that all resolutions with fiscal implications must go to the Budget Analysis and Review Committee, to BARC, before being added to the agenda. That adds to the timeline. Debate shall be limited to 3 minutes for each speaker, and no speaker may have the floor twice on the same question until all who wish to speak have spoken. We have timing lights that will indicate how much time you have. Here? Is that where they are? Can you see them? Ah, okay. And when the green light is on, you have up to 3 minutes. When the yellow light comes on, you have 1 minute remaining. And when the red light comes on, we appreciate your wrapping up your comments immediately because your time is up. And we appreciate monitoring yourself. I would prefer not to have to cut anyone off. Keep in mind, this is not intended to stifle debate, just to focus our conversations, but we want to be fair and give everyone the option to speak. Is there any objection to the opposed rules? All right, if there's no objection, then I declare the rules are adopted by consent. As a courtesy to others, please turn off your cell phones or turn them to silent prompting. If you need to make or take a call, if you will please leave the council chambers, it will help all of us. Thank you. The Resolutions Committee asks that all resolutions be emailed to Councillor Larry Romans, Chair of the Resolutions Committee, at ALAResolutions@ala.org. This will aid the projectionist in preparing your motion for overhead screens. We'll already have the electronic copy. The Resolutions Committee is stationed in the ALA office area, table number 12, in this convention center during the times listed in the ALA Council Document 3. Would Councillor Larry Romans please stand so that everyone can recognize you? Thanks. Also, please be reminded that all committee reports and documents must be emailed to Lois Ann Gregory Wood, ALA Council Secretariat at lgregory@ala.org, no later than 6 o'clock p.m. on the day preceding the council meeting at which they are to be discussed. Also, please provide Lois Ann with a contact phone number in case there's a question about your document. The agenda ALA CD number 8.1 revised 1-25-14 is available on the council webpage and at the council document pickup tables in the back. On the agenda, you'll find allocations of time to certain issues, and these time limits are only estimates to guide me as I run the meeting. I'm supposed to end us on time. Under the 24-hour rule, we have received the following resolutions to add under new business. Resolution on electronic communications for ALA Council, ALA CD number 34. Resolution to improve member access to ALA units governing information, ALA CD number 35. And resolution on whistleblower Edward Snowden, ALA CD number 37. Do you have any other items to add at this time? Microphone number 4.
Deidre Conkling, Councillor at Large. We'd like to remove resolution on whistleblower Edward Snowden, CD number 37, to Council 2.
Yes, that's fine. Thank you. Thank you. We can do that. So that's ALA. CD number 37 is being moved to Council 2. Any other items that you would like to add or change? All right. If there are no objections to the agenda as amended, I declare the agenda adopted. I suggest that committee chairs who are on the agenda to report, please come up to the stage and sit beside Keith Michael Fields shortly before your presentation so we can be very timely. The minutes of the 2013 ALA Annual Conference, ALA Council Document 2, along with various other council documents, were posted on the council webpage. Paper copies are also available at the council documents pickup table in the back of the room. Are there any corrections to the minutes that we should note? Thank you. If there are no objections, then the chair declares ALA Council minutes from the 2013 Annual Conference adopted. Thank you. Microphone number 3.
Point of information, we received an email that said Council document number 4 is the ALA APA Treasurer's Report. On the Council website, that Council document number 4 is the What's Happening report, and I don't see the ALA APA Treasurer's Report listed. Okay, it's at the end? Okay.
And it's very confusing because what you'll see is ALA CD number 4 and then ALA APA number 4. Thank you for bringing that up because it is confusing. We put on a different hat and there aren't very many signals that we're in the other hat. The next item on the agenda is nominations for the 2014 ALA Executive Board election. I now call upon Courtney L. Young, Chair of the 2013-2014 ALA Council Committee on Committees, to present the committee's report. Courtney?
Thank you, Madam President. Good morning. On behalf of the 2013-2014 ALA Committee on Committees, Roberto Carlos Delgadillo, John C. DeSantis, Ebony M. Henry, and Julius C. Jefferson, and myself, it is my pleasure to present Council Document Number 11, which contains committee nominations for election to the ALA Executive Board. The first three candidates receiving the highest number of votes will be elected to three-year terms and will be seated on the Executive Board at its fall meeting on October 24th through 26th, 2014, in Chicago. The fourth candidate receiving the greatest number of votes will be seated at the third Executive Board meeting at this midwinter meeting to complete the unexpired term, five-month term, January 28th through July 1, 2014, of Sylvia K. Norton, recently appointed Executive Director of the ALA American Association of School Libraries. As any one of the nominated candidates could be elected to the five-month term that begins at this midwinter meeting, all candidates should be prepared to remain in Philadelphia until Tuesday evening, January 28th, or Wednesday morning, January 29th, 2014. Will the candidates please stand when named? Please hold your applause until all candidates have been named. The candidates are Peter D. Hepburn, Head Librarian, College of the Canyons, Santa Clarita, California. Gina A. Persicini, Networking Consultant, Idaho Commission for Libraries, Boise, Idaho. Alexandra P. Rivera, Student Enrichment and Community Outreach Librarian, University of Michigan, Ann Arbor, Michigan. Gail A. Schlachter, President, Reference Service Press, El Dorado Hills, California. Aaron W. Dobbs, Systems and Electronic Resources Librarian, Shippensburg University of Pennsylvania, Shippensburg, Pennsylvania. And Mike L. Marlin, Director, Braille and Talking Book Library, California State Library, Sacramento, California.
Thank you, Courtney. The chair would like to call your attention to Bylaw Article 3, Section 6C, which provides for nominations from the floor. Eligible floor nominations must be counselors who have already served on council at both the 2013 midwinter meeting and the annual conference. Anyone continuing the second or third year of their term, as well as those whose terms expired at the end of the annual conference in Chicago, but were reelected to council, may be nominated from the floor. Are there any nominations from the floor for ALA Executive Board election? All right. If there are no nominations, the chair declares the nominations closed. The chair will now repeat the names of all of the candidates nominated for election to the ALA Executive Board. The candidates are Peter D. Hepburn, Head Librarian, College of the Canyons, Santa Clarita, California. Gina A. Persicini, Networking Consultant, Idaho Commission for Libraries, Boise, Idaho. Alexandra P. Rivera, Student Enrichment and Community Outreach Librarian, University of Michigan Library, Ann Arbor, Michigan. Gail Schlachter, President, Reference Service Press, El Dorado Hills, California. Aaron W. Dobbs, Systems and Electronic Resources Librarian, Shippensburg University of Pennsylvania, Shippensburg, Pennsylvania, and Mike L. Marlin, Director, Braille and Talking Book Library, California State Library, Sacramento, California. Please be reminded that the ALA Executive Board Candidates Forum will be held tomorrow, Monday, January 27th, from 12:30 p.m. to 1:30 p.m. or shortly following the close of Council 2 in this room. The forum is designed to allow the Council an opportunity to hear the views and ask questions of the Executive Board candidates. Ballots will be ready for you to pick up immediately following the Executive Board Candidates Forum tomorrow. That's, again, tomorrow, Monday, January 27th, from 12:30 to 1:30 p.m. The ballots and ballot box will remain in the Council Room from 1:30 to 2:30, and then from 3:30 to 7:30. You must call for your ballot in person. The tellers will close the ballot box at 7:30 p.m. Monday night in order to tally the votes, and they will present their report to you on Tuesday during the final meeting. As noted in ALA Council Document 11.1, the following councillors have volunteered to serve as tellers for the election: Brenda Pruitt-Anisset, Kent Slade, Denise Zielinski, and John C. Sandstrom, Chair. So thank you very much for volunteering. It's a good job. Thank you. The Chair now refers you to ALA Council Document 15 and calls upon ALA Executive Director Keith Michael Fields to review the Executive Board actions taken since the 2013 Annual Conference in Chicago, Illinois.
Thank you, Barbara. Again, Council Document 15, I'll just touch on a couple of highlights. Obviously, number of budget-related actions in order to move forward the 14 budget. A number of resolutions and actions related to staff compensation, including the action taken and this is based on a previous resolution, that if financial results permitted it, that top priority would be granted to staff compensation in fiscal year 13, which ended on August 31st. Very pleased to report that because we were through expense reductions and careful management able to produce a positive result, the board was able to approve a 2% organizational incentive for all staff in recognition of their very hard work. The board also moved because the 2014 budget does not include a compensation increase, also to indicate that pending the outcome, and we are working, of course, to try and produce that outcome, that staff compensation will be the highest priority if, in fact, we are able to achieve positive financial results in the current fiscal year. The board also approved resolution that we are working with that the 2015 budget will include a compensation increase, an adjustment to base for all ALA staff, and that is the basis upon which we are crafting the 2015 budget. Other actions, including entering into an agreement with the Margaret Alexander Edwards Trust, which has now become part of the ALA family of endowments, and this supports young adult services. The trust is just under $1 million, so that is a very, I think, important development. Board also approved upholding the Committee on Accreditation's decision to withdraw accreditation from the Master of Library Science program at Southern Connecticut State University. Compensation-related issues, the board approved a continuation of a 10% voluntary salary reduction for the executive director and the senior associate executive director for 2014 as part of our need contain expenditures during the current fiscal year. The entire senior management at ALA had taken a salary, 10% voluntary salary reduction last year. We were very happy to report that due to our positive financial results, we were able to make top management whole for 2013. And the last item of all is the approval of the statement on conference conduct, which you've all seen and discussed, which is in accordance with existing ALA policy and the existing legal frameworks for use in conjunction with ALA conferences. Those are some of the highlights. You have document 15.
Are there any questions for Keith? Microphone number four.
Al Kagan, CERT Counselor. I just wanted to get on the record some of the feedback from the Council listserv about the governance, the statement on conduct governance. When it first came up, I stated that I was quite in favor of the document that was put together. But I want to make sure that everyone understands that in the past, for instance, the Social Responsibilities Roundtable has organized several different demonstrations for different reasons at the conference. Of course, they were always very peaceful and orderly. But in one case, I remember, in New Orleans, convention center security came and said they were going to arrest us unless we left and stopped immediately. And of course, I think it was Keith that came by and said, no, no, it's okay, it's a legal protest. So I want to make sure that this statement doesn't get in the way of any kinds of civil liberties activities that we may want to do in the future.
Microphone three.
Bernie Margolis, Counselor at Large. Good morning. Thank you for your report, Keith. I have a question about the vote of the Executive Board in the last fall, voted against the recommendation that the PBA agenda for this meeting include, and then there's a list of financial reports. Can you give us some context? Who did the recommendation come from? Why did the Executive Board vote against it? And is there some other plan to enrich the work of the PBA? Thank you.
Great. Thank you for asking. As you know, there has been significant discussion over the last 6 months about the role of the Planning and Budget Assembly. And particularly in light of the fact that ALA is, it's been a let's say a challenging couple of years, I think attention is being focused on the ALA budget, which I think is a very positive development. There were some discussions about whether the existing structure of the PBA was serving our needs, and part of what came out of that then was a suggestion that a particular agenda be adopted. As that was discussed at the board level, it was felt that it needed to be more fluid. All of the items that are listed in that resolution, in fact, will be covered on the PBA agenda. I think it was the feeling of the board that the PBA was an active body that needed to be able to make that determination best, and that they had been doing it well, and that there was no need for the board to actually set the agenda for the assembly itself.
Microphone three.
Nick Buron, Counselor at Large. I just didn't want to let this pass. I wanted to thank you and the senior administrators involved for putting your literal money where your mouth is and helping to support our organization. Thank you.
Thank you.
Microphone three.
Hey, that's me. Lauren Comito, Counselor at Large. Regarding the code of conduct, I would like to see some more detailed explanation of what happens after a report is made, because so many people don't report harassment because they don't feel like anything's going to happen. I'd like to see like a procedure of what the steps are that will be taken should someone report harassment, so that people feel more open to making a report.
Right. We have been having, we had a session with ALA staff who were going to be at conference with Paula Gettert, who is our legal counsel, on the implications of the code of conduct and the role that staff would play. I think that I can promise, based on that, we can send out some additional information. One of the things that Paula has suggested is that it needs to be relatively fluid, in that we want people to feel comfortable in reporting to us if they feel there has been harassment, then saying exactly what will happen at that point. Each situation is unique, but I think we can provide a little bit more information in response to what you've asked. If we need to have more discussion, then we can continue from that. But just so that you know, we have certain limits legally in terms of disciplinary action that we take. Normally speaking, if there is harassment involved, we try and bring in sometimes it's a matter of actually contacting the police or contacting security, because they are the individuals that are equipped in some instances, or in most instances, to deal with this. Having said that, it really depends on the individual situation. So we'll try and send more information out, and insofar as we can, to flesh it out a little bit, so that the main thing is that people will feel comfortable in letting us know, or letting conference service staff know. I should also note, conference services staff are the key contact people here. So if you somebody approaches Barbara or myself, we will get them linked up with conference services, because they need to be the sort of keepers of this process.
Microphone three.
Sue Cam, Counselor at Large. Will the code of conduct as an entire document be incorporated into the policy manual, so that people don't have to go hunting all over for information on the code of conduct and how it's going to be enforced?
That makes perfect sense. We'll do that somehow, right?
Knowing that the code of conduct right. is not policy,
right.
So it's not going in as a policy. It's not a separate policy, it's guidelines. So we'll have to figure out how it is appropriately placed. Any other questions? All right. Thank you. If there aren't any questions, we will move to ALA Council Document Number 9, which is the Implementation Report of Council's 2013 Annual Conference Actions. The Chair will again call upon Keith Michael Fields to respond to any questions about Council Document 9.
And again, I will just highlight a couple. A Declaration of Right to Libraries. Barbara's report, I think, has provided some information on the many activities that flowed from that resolution. The discussion of the Committee on Organization recommendations regarding reporting, obviously there's been some continued discussion on that, and that's proceeding forward. The resolution on prayer, I was granted the responsibility of resolving the issue regarding terminology. The word meetings is comprehensive in its standard definition, so we did stick with that. I think it's the clearest of all. And then last but not least, obviously the resolution on reforms in the intelligence community. ALA has been, I think, very active and has received a great deal of public recognition for our activity in this area. So we've really been working very hard on this through the Washington office and Public Information Office and other ALA units. And then last of all, the resolution on decreasing printing. We are in the process of implementing that, and thank you for your help.
Microphone number three.
Sue Kam, Counselor at Large. One problem with receiving our documents as PDF, in PDF format, which is redundant, is that if we want to make notes online, we can't. Is there a way that they could be, even though Connect is clunky for some people, that if a document is presented in Word software, and especially when we're, if we're wordsmithing during the meeting, we can figure out how to what language changes might look like or what we might want to suggest more easily online than we can in the PDF format?
I think it's fair to say that we are in a transitional phase on this. And as everyone is aware, we have a number of, I won't say competing, but in some instances, contradictory directions that people would like us to go. I think that we will do everything we can to respond to making things available in a variety of formats. As I have indicated in my communication with Council, we're also at the same time trying to reduce redundancies, to reduce multiple duplicative postings of documents. I'm hoping over the course of the next 6 months that we'll resolve some of the basic issues so that we come into a general consensus and happy concert on what's the best way to post and to access and to communicate around documents. Thank you.
Any other questions, comments? Microphone number three.
Brian Schottlander, Lex Division Counselor. Just for the record, in case people don't know, it is possible to resave a PDF document as a Microsoft Word document and then go about your editing business.
If I may also make a comment, I think that one of the things that we have seen is that to, I mean, and this is, you know, stating the obvious, to make a technological capacity available and then to communicate and create a welcoming ramp so that people can use it comfortably are two different things, and that we certainly need to also focus on the rollout and the entry ramps onto these things.
Microphone number four.
Christopher Corrigan, District of Columbia Library Association. I don't know if it's, correct me on parliamentary terms here, but point of process question about CD number 38, resolution in support of whistleblower Bradley Manning. Manning is in transition and is now identifies as female. Do we have a process for rewording the document to reflect the name that she has chosen?
Actually, that's an interesting issue, and it relates to the PDF. Certain documents are documents of record. And they cannot be altered. Anyone who's a law librarian has been wrestling with that as an issue.
Okay, thank you. Yeah.
Microphone number four.
Jane Glasby, Counselor at Large. I'm just looking at the report, and you refer to the Bradley Manning resolution, which in fact was never discussed. And then as a note, the ALA Council also voted to reconsider and refer the Snowden resolution, and I'm just wondering why the Snowden resolution wasn't put in, since it passed council and then was overturned. I'm just wondering why that wasn't included in more fully in the report, and I'm wondering if you could amend the report to include it better. Thank you.
That seems like a reasonable request.
Seeing no one else at the microphone, we will proceed. Thank you, Keith. I now direct you to ALA Council Document Number 30 and call upon Sari Feldman and Robert Wolven, co-chairs of the Digital Content and Libraries Working Group, to present their report.
Thank you very much, and thank you for giving us this opportunity to present a report to you. The Digital Content and Libraries Working Group in its report is very pleased to note that all of the big five publishing houses, previously the big six publishing houses, are now selling digital content to libraries. but quite pleased by that accomplishment and the work that was done, including a recent trip to New York City led by President Barbara Stripling with ALA leadership also in attendance. And at that time, the ALA leadership met with Jeremy Greenfield, and there was an article in Forbes magazine. I think it's very obvious that ALA has had incredible recognition for its efforts in the effort to get the Big Five to sell digital content to public, to all libraries. And I will just point to you in the report the quote by Anthony Albanese from Publishers Weekly, which gives the due recognition to the American Library Association. As part of that understanding that we want to make sure the members know the hard work, the concentrated effort, the financial and other resource commitment that ALA has made to this issue, there was a ALA virtual town hall meeting held this year, and I think that the effort proved to be fruitful, both with people attending live as well as viewing the town hall after it was over. While this is a time to celebrate some accomplishments, there is much work to be done. Just with the Big Five alone, the pricing still needs to be addressed, but there are many, many other issues being taken up by the Digital Content and Libraries Working Group as we proceed. We continue to have visibility at different public events, and I want to say that our program yesterday was well attended and with great interest as well. Bob Walvin, my co-chair, who does extraordinary work for Digital Content and Libraries Working Group, will now talk about the future of our group.
Thank you, Sari. The working group held its business meeting, as it usually does, yesterday evening, and devoted almost the entire time to consideration of the future of the agenda for the group and of the group itself. We are very much aware that the charge for the group extends only through the annual conference that's coming up, and we have been conducting something of a self-assessment of what the group has accomplished and why, how it works, with the objective of conveying recommendations to ALA leadership about the agenda that still needs attention and how best it might be carried out, not necessarily through a perpetual committee, but with some recommendations for the future of the group and its work. I'm very pleased to note that President Barbara Stripling attended the meeting yesterday evening, and that's another sign of the commitment of the leadership of ALA, both to listen to the views of the group and to set the work of the group in the context of the association's overall program. We have identified a number of issues. Sari mentioned a couple of them, the continued interest or concern over pricing from the major publishers, and several that we have need to pursue perhaps more than we have in the last couple of years. A couple of examples of that, we have started to consider preservation primarily of trade ebooks, and that still needs a good deal of attention. There is a wealth of new publishing alternatives and the role of self-publishing that we think needs some focus and energy. Other media besides text and ebooks, and particularly some attention to streaming video as something that we think will emerge as an issue. And of course, continuing concerns over issues such as privacy and accessibility. So we will continue these deliberations between now and the annual conference, regroup around a new agenda, and provide some recommendations to ALA leadership about what the future might hold. I want to conclude by once again thanking the leadership of ALA for the support, the attention, the focus on this group, and particularly, we can never say enough to thank the OITP staff for the support they've given. The work of the group would not be able to take place without that dedication and effort. And I also want to thank my co-chair, Sari Feldman, for making this a pleasurable and relatively easy experience.
Are there any questions for Sari and or Bob? Thank you very much for reporting. We will now take up new business. Will ALA Councillor John Sandstrom please go to the microphone and read only the resolved clause of ALA Council Document Number 34, Resolution on Electronic Communications for ALA Council. John, microphone two.
John Sandstrom, Councillor at Large. Resolve that, one, the ALA president shall appoint a task force to the council to work with ALA headquarters staff to A, examine and revise as needed the guidelines for council email lists and electronic communications, B, determine when various council documents should be available to the membership at large and the public at large, C, determine what options are available for sharing council documents and what are their capabilities, requirements, and the consequences of each option. D, make recommendations to council regarding which options should be adopted. E, determine a schedule for reexamining these issues. Two, the task force shall prepare an interim report for annual 2014. And three, the task force shall prepare a final report and recommendations for midwinter 2015.
Would you like to speak to the resolution, John?
Yes, I would. The genesis of this resolution came from the discussions on the council list for who is for where we were getting our council documents. Were they to the list, to the web page, to Connect? And when I was talking to headquarters staff about that, it came out that the guidelines they are working under date from 1994. The tools that we have available since then have changed quite a bit, and I believe it's time that we take a look at those guidelines again to give headquarters staff the clear guidance that they need from this body. Thank you.
Thank you, John. Microphone three.
Karen Schneider, Councillor at Large. I've been decrying the fact that the council documents have been posted to the ALA website until I read page 16 of the council implementation document and realized that we had voted to direct ALA to do that in June. So I take back my decrying, but I also hope that we can come to a reasonable determination of where documents should be posted consistently and give ALA staff appropriate guidance. Thank you.
Are there any other questions or comments? All right, then we will, microphone three.
I'd actually like, Daniel Cornwall, Alastra Chapter Counselor. I'd like to speak against this resolution simply because it seems like a choice of communication tools doesn't need to be subject to a potentially year-long task force report. And I think either it ought to be a simple poll of the councilors as to what their preferred forum is, or as it seems to me more of an operational issue than a policy issue, to allow the executive council to determine the best format to place documents, and then we'll go there. Thank you.
I see no one else at the microphone, so we will proceed to the vote. You have the resolved clauses up on the screen. Resolution on Electronic Communications for ALA Council. It's kind of long, but if you will permit me, I think we have time today. I think it's a better process to read it. So I will at least read the three main bullet points. The ALA president shall appoint a task force of the council to work with ALA headquarters staff to determining examination and making recommendations. The task force shall prepare an interim report for annual 2014. The task force shall prepare a final report and recommendations for midwinter 2015. That's what you're voting on. Will all those in favor please raise one of your hands? Thank you. Will all of those opposed please raise one of your hands? Thank you. The motion passes. Oh, there it is. Mark your ballot, CD number 34. Would ALA Councillor Gina Persicini please go to the microphone and read only the resolve clause of ALA Council document number 35, resolution to improve member access to ALA unit governing information. Microphone 3.
Gina Persicini, Idaho Chapter Counselor. Resolve, the American Library Association shall change policy A.7.4 to include all governing bodies of ALA divisions and roundtables link their meeting minutes from the unit's ALA-hosted webpage within 30 days of approval of the minutes.
Would you like to speak to the resolution?
I'd love to. for clarification, this resolution is not about council documents, nor is it about ALA or council committees. ALA policy already addresses the matter of meeting minutes for council and ALA executive board. The ALA Committee on Organization, CU, is addressing consistent reporting of ALA and council committees. I suspect we'll hear more about that this week. This resolution addresses the ability of ALA members to keep up with the activities of divisions and roundtable executive committees. ALA policy already asks that ALA units have open meetings. Since not all ALA members are able to attend midwinter meetings or annual conference, and since those that do attend are unable to attend every meeting due to scheduling constraints and the fact that we haven't perfected time travel, I believe that sharing meeting minutes of a governing body is a reasonable alternative to keep membership and prospective members informed of the activities of the unit. The resolution does not specify where the document must be stored. I suspect we might learn more about that in the next year. It could be on a website, Connect, or somewhere else. The resolution asks only that a link from the unit website direct a user to the location of the minutes. It could be accomplished with one link, one time. Any additional work is up to the individual. The point is not to dictate how units must share their minutes, but merely to ask that the minutes be somehow discoverable to the average member. Of course, this doesn't refer to draft minutes. The 30 days in the resolved clause is after the minutes are approved. That means for those groups that only meet twice a year, we're talking approximately 7 months after the meeting took place. Let's skip that question. I just want to say, we talk of openness. We talk of openness and transparency in our association. I don't think it's an unrealistic expectation that members be able to read the minutes of the meetings of their unit leadership. The resolution just puts that expectation in writing and makes it real, so future leaders of those units know that is something to do.
Microphone 6.
Bob Holly, IFRT counselor. I would like to request that perhaps we need a definition of governing bodies. Many of the divisions not only have main governing bodies for the whole division, but they have sections, and it is unclear from this whether those section governing bodies would be included in this motion or not. So I think it would be better if we had some sort of clarification on what governing bodies means.
Microphone 4.
Joan Weeks, member at large. I'm the IRRT webmaster, and since 2007, I've been putting the IRRT committee and meeting minutes on a wiki. because I saw so many meeting minutes lost, but I've been providing a link to the current minutes, and this resolution, I don't see what it defines, because this wiki now has links and links and links to minutes. And this resolution perhaps is trying to say, okay, you just put the current minutes, or do you keep putting minutes, or how you archive these minutes, and then how they become searchable. So I think it's very unclear here. Is it just the current minutes? And if so, I think we would need to include that. Thank you.
Microphone three.
Bernie Margolis, Counselor at Large. We really are in the weeds, aren't we? So let's get a little deeper. I want to suggest that we add a word, because the way this stands now, there's no operation here. It says, all governing bodies of ALA divisions and roundtables link their meeting minutes. That's just a statement. It needs a word like, roundtables shall link their meeting minutes. Otherwise, we're doing is making a statement. So I want to suggest that that be added. Shall. Thanks.
Microphone three.
Sue Cam, Counselor at Large. I think that 7 months for members to wait to see what their committees and divisions and roundtables, so on, have accomplished is an awfully long time to wait. I'd like to see some provision made for a report to be posted within 30 days after the meeting at which the meeting takes place, so that if the members of the committee or members of ALA have questions or concerns, they can bring them up and know that they'll be acted upon sooner than a year following the meeting.
Microphone four.
Jim Kuhn, Counselor at Large. This question may arise from my own ignorance of the process, but one thing that I notice in this resolved is that it does not include committees of counsel. And what isn't clear to me is where those minutes go, and whether, in fact, they're open and available to all members of the association, only to members of council, only to members of the committees, and maybe someone can enlighten us as to that question. And if I'd like to see them go to all members of the association, and so I may be back up at the microphone proposing a modification to this, but I'm not prepared to do that yet because I don't feel I know enough. Thank you.
Microphone number six.
Larry Romans, Counselor at Large. I think a number of good...
Larry, could you raise the microphone, perhaps?
Larry Romans, Counselor at Large. I think a number of good points have been made, and because of this, I'd like to postpone our consideration of this until the next meeting so that the mover can take into consideration the comments that have been made rather than our having a number of amendments and so forth.
Are you
moving
to postpone?
Yes.
Is there any discussion on the move to... Oh, do we have a second? Yeah. We have a second. Is there any discussion on the move to postpone? Microphone three.
Nick Buron, Counselor at Large. I welcome the opportunity to postpone because my point of coming up here was to try to rally some division representatives, roundtable representatives. We're talking about your minutes, and all I hear are counselors at large up here, and I would like to hear more from the people whose minutes we're actually talking about.
Microphone three.
Brian Schottlander, elects division counselor, speaking of a division person. Thank you for being a mind reader. I would just offer a couple of comments. We did discuss this in our board meeting day before yesterday. We're generally supportive, though with many of the same stipulations that have been raised on the floor thus far. One additional...
Okay, but you need to speak to the move to postpone.
I speak to the motion to postpone. And would urge Gail in taking the document back for additional work to consider the addition of the phrase or record of actions following the word minutes, because in fact a number of divisions within ALA either don't take minutes or do take minutes but make publicly available records of their actions. Thank you.
Thank you. Any further comments or questions on the move to postpone? All those in favor of postponing CD number 35 until Council 2, please raise your hand. Thank you. All of those opposed to postponing, thank you. The motion will be postponed to Council 2. Mark your ballot. CD number 35, postpone until Council 2. Would microphone 3?
Am I allowed to just clarify a point that was raised? I'm not really directing the resolution, but there was a question. I'm just going to talk. Gina Persicini, Idaho Chapter Counselor. There was a question regarding council minutes and possibly ALA executive board minutes, and I just wanted to state that ALA policy already addresses those specifically in a separate part of our policy manual.
So. Thank you. All right. Would ALA Councillor Deidre Conkling please go to the microphone? No, we don't need that. Excuse me. Retread. All right. That is the end of our new business. All right. I now call upon Keith Michael Fields, ALA Executive Director and Secretary to the ALA Council for announcements. Keith?
Thank you, Barbara. We have received petitions for Councillor at Large from Laura Koltutsky, who's the Associate Librarian at the University of Calgary in Alberta, Canada. And the other announcement is the midwinter registration currently stands at 5,583 on-site, advanced, 501 on-site, and 2,007 exhibit onlys for a grand total of 8,091 registrants and an additional 3,763 exhibitors for a grand total of 11,854.
Okay. All right. You all are very efficient. We are, microphone number 6, sorry.
Eric Cease, Councillor at Large. It's a, I guess, point of information or something. Last night at the council reception, a young lady left her bag there. She's not a councillor. It was Colleen Thiessen. So if you were there with Colleen, her bag is in security or the loss prevention area of the Marriott. Unfortunately, I believe she probably took my bag. So if anybody knows Colleen and would like to get her in touch with me, I would be very appreciative. Thank you.
Thank you. Microphone number 4.
Jim Kuhn, Councillor at Large, and I'll be once again co-convener of ALA Council Forum 1, which will be tonight from 8:30 to 10 p.m. Marriott Grand 1, or maybe that's Grand I, open to all. I'm afraid I don't know who my co-convener is. Come on and find me. If it's just me, I'll see you all there and we'll get through it just fine. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Microphone 5.
Andrew Medler, House Counselor and co-convener of the Youth Council Caucus, which was current currently scheduled to meet at 11:30, but in light of us completing this meeting earlier, we would like to meet instead, convene at 10 o'clock in this room by microphone two.
It'll have to be a little bit later. We have APA Council
next. Then maybe 10:15?
Well, it depends on how fast we get through.
15 minutes following the completion of that meeting.
Good.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any further announcements? All right. I would like to remind you, please be sure you've written your name and signed your vote tally card before passing it to the aisles for collection. Again, remember, cards without names will be voided. I declare the first meeting of the ALA Council adjourned.